Joining me in the studio this morning for the week that was proudly brought to you by BTC Constructions, from residential, commercial to project management, they cover all aspects of construction. I have got Terry Mills, the leader of Territory Alliance and also the member for Blaine.
Good morning, Katie.
Terry. We've also got Leah Finocchiaro, the opposition leader and the member for Spillet.
Good morning. Oh, sorry. Cut you off there. Good morning.
We've also got the Attorney General and Health Minister and Member for Nightcliff, Natasha Files. Good morning.
Morning, Wolfie. Morning, listeners.
And we are all at a nice social distance this morning.
We're back in the boardroom.
Back in the boardroom at a physical distance, I think, is what we're choosing to say now, rather than social distance, because we don't want people to feel too isolated, and there's no doubt about that. But look, bit of a coronavirus update. We do know that an Alice Springs woman has recently returned from the United Kingdom and has tested positive for coronavirus. That was last night. Now, the woman, aged in her 20s, has been in self-quarantine since returning from overseas. And under those national medical guidelines, contact tracing on her flight isn't required due to that delay between her return and becoming unwell. But we've now got 22 cases of COVID-19. However, we've managed to still not have that community transmission, which seems to be a really good thing at this point in time.
So all of the cases, Katie, to date in the Northern Territory have been acquired from interstate or overseas travel. We've got 4 cases in Central Australia and the rest are here in the top end. One person has recovered and the other people are being cared for by our health professionals either in Central Australia or the top end.
I understand that somebody was in the intensive care unit earlier in the week. Have we got any idea how that person's travelling?
I don't have their clinical details around that, but I understand that they're travelling okay.
There's been quite a few people questioning whether we're actually testing enough people. And I had that raised with me again throughout the week. Somebody saying that they had a loved one come back from interstate and who hadn't been unwell but then had sort of become unwell but had fallen outside of the time frame when we started testing those people. So I guess there's still plenty of people out there wondering if we're testing enough people.
So Katie, the testing's based on clinical decisions, so anyone that's feeling unwell needs to reach out to the health hotline and they'll be talked through and provided with advice. We've tested close to 2,300 people, and that was the figure from around 24 hours ago, so I expect that would have risen. They are working around the clock at the pathology labs to make sure those test results get out as quickly as possible to people. In terms of testing, it's a balance. We don't want to test people and then come back with a negative test and they think that they're okay and then actually a few days later. So it's important, if anyone feels slightly unwell, don't just head down to the shops and grab some supplies. Stay at home. Self-quarantine immediately, as well as all of those other people that are required to.
We're doing quite well, I think, in terms of people actually adhering to the guidelines and what is expected of them. To me, it seems as though most people aren't really heading out unless they have to. I don't know if that's a fair observation in the electorates in which you guys are in.
Yeah, no, I definitely think so. I think people are very conscious of their actions. I think our hand hygiene, the distancing measures, I mean, some of the things our supermarkets and other retailers have done to keep it front of mind. I mean, it's often if you are going out for takeaway to support a small local business, that there are sticky tape crosses on the floor just to remind you, stand this far away. People really observing the pay wave and some of those other measures. So it's really important we all do our bit, and I think Territorians are certainly conscious of what we need to do.
Yeah, I agree, and it's tremendous that we've got the community beginning to really pay attention and respond to this thoughtfully. But you even see it in the way that people are interacting with each other. You know, it's I didn't want to use that word social distancing, because we still need to be connected with each other. And I think out of this, we're building a higher level of social capital, that people are thinking about each other more than they have before. And I thought about it the other day when I was backing out into the traffic. Normally it's a real drama, but someone stopped for me.
Yeah.
It's like we're looking after each other.
Yep, and I thought, oh, there you go.
Yeah, so
it's nice.
And that's sweet. But just in terms of the good news for the Territory, that those that carry COVID-19 into the Territory are bringing it from outside. Just last night I read online that there was a couple of new cases in the Kimberleys, and one of those was locally contracted, and that's right on the border.
Yep.
So that is something to watch, and I'm wondering whether, Tash, you have something on that.
So we became aware on Wednesday, quite late, it was in the evening, Katie, that we had seen cases in the Kimberley region, so Kununurra, Broome and Halls Creek. The Chief Executive of Health reached out to her WA counterparts and was able to be provided with factual information, which I think is really important. We all hear so many rumours at the moment, and we immediately provided further reinforcements, and I'd like to acknowledge the Police Commissioner, Jamie Chalker, and his crew. They had already had measures out there on those roads, but they provided further reinforcements in the middle of the night because we were worried that once word got out that there was confirmed cases in the Kimberley region, that people might try and push into the territory. That hasn't eventuated, but those officers literally went out there in the middle of the night, and we've also continued to work with those WA authorities in terms of they're doing the contact tracing for those cases, and it certainly highlights to us how easily this can spread. My understanding is that is from one clinical person, but it's had a huge impact across that region.
I want to give you a bit of an update on some of the numbers that were released by the Northern Territory Police yesterday morning at 8 a.m. These stats are up until now. The number required to quarantine is sitting at 2,557. Those compliance checks are 1,126 they've done, and the number of fines issued obviously is 2. We know that really, I think you've got to take a pretty tough stand on those that do actually not take this seriously and break the rules. I think the reason that I feel as though that's quite important is because you don't want other people just thinking it's okay to be laxed and go out to the chemist and interact with people and spread COVID-19.
Absolutely. And people's lives literally depend on it, Katie. So if you are doing the wrong thing, that absolutely, you know, you need to be come down on, because it's not right. You know, it's not fair to everybody else who is doing the right thing. It's not fair to us as a jurisdiction who've been able to limit or not have that community transmission. So so it's terrific to hear what Natasha just said earlier, and a huge thanks to our authorities who are working overtime to protect us.
Picking up on that point, there are people working around the clock. So there's the laboratories that are doing the testing. There is police. There is health workers. They are doing everything they can to protect the community. All we need Territorians to do is listen to the advice and stay at home. Mm. If you're in a remote community, the best place for you is your remote community.
Yep.
You see someone in community, and we've all visited communities, and when you drive in, people know you're there. If there's people coming into community that you don't know, alert the authorities, and equally in our urban areas, minimise. Don't go to Woolworths every second day. Go once a week. And if you can minimise that contact, that will stop the spread of coronavirus.
Look, a bit of a personal story. I was talking to my brother yesterday, who's in the UK. Now, he and his whole family have actually become fairly unwell. His wife was really unwell for a few days with all of the symptoms of coronavirus. They don't actually know whether they do or don't have coronavirus, because you aren't tested at this point in the UK, he tells me, unless you've been admitted to hospital. So they're in a situation where they're just dealing with things at home and obviously self-isolating. But he also said that they have, they're in a situation in some areas of the UK where they simply do not have enough tests.
Katie, this is something, it's a challenge. The testing, I've been working with my state and territory and the federal health minister to make sure that Australia, the Northern Territory, gets those testing agents that we need. That's what goes through the laboratory machines. But we are seeing overseas where they have pulled back on testing, and they're just testing the critically ill so that they can understand and help treat them. But I think we've seen the spread, it's over a million cases diagnosed worldwide. That's diagnosed, and then there's stories such as what you've just shared,
where you don't actually know.
Yes, and then tragically the deaths just keep rising. So
some of the images that have come out from overseas, I mean, seeing places like Central Park have their, you know, have set up, like these health facilities being set up in places like Central Park, it's quite unbelievable to see, and I think just really shows that this is a serious situation. We need to take it so seriously in terms of continuing to really adhere to the advice that we're being given by the authorities. Do not go out if you don't need to. You know, we've got to make sure that we are doing that physical distancing and just trying our best, because all of the borders are now cut off really for us. So if we're able to contain this and stop that community transmission, I would hope that it maybe means the Territory can get back to business a little bit sooner.
Katie, it was interesting watching one of the reports from New York, and that the people setting up that field hospital said, you know, we've set this up before. We usually deploy internationally to help developing nations, and they said, we never thought we'd be setting it up in Central Park.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And also, I want to say that we're so lucky, really, that we've got our National Critical Care and Trauma Response Team, and I think that they're ready to go whenever we need them, aren't they?
Katie, they're already helping. They're actually in Western Australia helping the authorities there get people off those cruise ships. I know people were very nervous when we opened Howard Springs and we took those evacuees, which were Australians, trying to get them home. But that has actually really helped us. We've stood that facility up. We understand. We had a trial run, so to speak, and we hope we don't see those numbers. But Territorians can be assured we are prepared.
Falsi, you know, we talk a lot about this curve and everybody talks about sort of, you know, trying to minimise that curve or whatever the wording is. How do you think we're placed in the Northern Territory? If we're going to have a jump in cases, can we expect that in coming weeks? Like, you know, where are we sort of at with this curve?
Katie, we just don't know. And that's one of the most difficult things. We're planning for the unknown. What we have seen on the East Coast, though, we have seen their numbers grow and we've seen that community transmission. And for listeners, they're hearing all these words. Community transmission means that we don't know where the case came from. So if you were to be ill and you've come back from overseas or interstate, we know that. But if you suddenly became ill, we don't necessarily know where you've picked that up in the community, and that's the figure that we need to watch. So the longer we can avoid community transmission in the Territory, the better off we'll be, but we certainly can't be complacent.
360's The Week That Was for BTC Constructions.
Yes, we are proudly brought to you by BTC Constructions. From residential to commercial and project management, they cover all aspects of construction. Now, look, there's been a lot of initiatives and announcements really made by the Prime Minister Scott Morrison in recent days. Some of them, I mean, just as soon as something's announced, it changes. But in this case, this week, I think there were a lot of Australians really breathing a real sigh of relief when they found out that this wage subsidy was coming into play. $1,500 per employee for those who are eligible. I know that there's a lot of territory businesses that you know, that this has just given them some relief, I think.
Katie, talking to someone that was in the situation that the work that they're in has completely dried off, and it's, and they understand that, the health reasons for it, but they said that this has made a huge difference to them. It's just a relief for them to know that there's some, you know, it's not ideal, but there's some money coming in that will pay the essentials, and that just gives them time to breathe. So we certainly very much welcome to the announcement from
it's
the federal
very,
government.
It's a very, very important initiative because this sends a signal to what comes next. You've got to have a functioning economy. You've got to have workers connected to employers post this crisis. In the Territory, if we were to lose that and break that connection, it's going to be even harder for us to recover. So certainly welcome that initiative. And I think it's something that's even more important for the Territory than in any of the other states.
I was really, I had a really insightful discussion with Dick Goyt yesterday, who obviously is chairing the advisory group. And he said that one of the biggest concerns that's raised with the businesses that he's speaking to is that they just don't know how long they need to plan for in this situation. And that was why that wage subsidy being announced was a huge assistance to them. And I actually caught up with Phoebe, one of the lady from the Roma Bar yesterday, and she echoed exactly that. And she basically said to me that, you know, that's the big thing for them and for so many businesses at this point in time is that they really don't know over what period of time they're planning for. And if you can at least then keep those employees on and you've got that assistance from the federal government, it's a huge help. There are, of course, still so many fixed costs for businesses, and that's a really tough thing as well, trying to juggle those fixed costs, but being able to keep those employees on. And Terry, that point you made as well then about being able to ramp up when this is all sort of done and dusted, or when things settle down a little bit, when we're over that mountain. I think that that is so important. But also, from that discussion with Dick Goyt, he said that what we're seeing is the public service work faster than what we've seen them ever work before, really. And they've got to work faster, both federally and locally. But he's hoping that that continues on as well after this is over.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We've got to be agile and responsive, and it's really critical. I mean, the funding that's come out of the federal government and even the territory government is absolutely to be applauded. It's not perfect in every single sense, but it's incredible, and it's going to support thousands and tens of thousands of people to stay connected to their employment, stay you know, receiving some sort of income over this difficult time. But you're right, Katie, we've already got to be planning for
after
this post world, you know, whatever that's going to look like, because we do need our businesses to be able to, whether it's hibernate, continue to operate, innovate, change their business, they've, you know, we need them here to be at the other end.
Oh, and look, I know know that I can be a skeptic about a lot of things, but one thing that I certainly am, and I know there's a lot of Territorians that are as well, is an optimist. And I think to myself, from, you know, devastating situations, great opportunity arises. And for the Northern Territory, I really hope that we see that. I hope that we see a situation where our great thinkers, you know, the three of you obviously are in those leadership roles, where we start to look to different industry and different ways that we can try to lead the Northern Territory forward, so that we're not so reliant on the investment from other countries. And I know that that's probably something that's really being looked at by Australia in general, and the way that we can be a little bit more self-sufficient, but some of the different opportunities that could arise from this terrible situation.
So, Katie, the Jobs Rescue and Recovery Package, the Small Business Survival Fund, is over $1 billion from the federal government and the territory government going out the door to support territory businesses. And this helps set us up for the rebound. And there will be a rebound. Coronavirus will pass, whether we have the vaccine, whether our bodies become more used to the virus and it has less of a devastating impact, flattening that curve. And that's a key point. So we can manage the people that become critically unwell. Remembering 80% of people will be mildly unwell. But for our business community and for our economy, it's so important. And I think the shock of the last few weeks, I think that that's been really difficult for people. But we've seen such innovation. We've seen catering companies that go from catering events to now providing my dinner pretty much every night, which is amazing. And I don't think, you know, I think that will continue post this. So just making sure that we keep people in jobs, keep people here, support that innovation. And we were just talking about government in terms of that red tape, you know, being agile and flexible at this time. Some things will work, some things won't, and we'll have to acknowledge that. But there's certainly a real time for creativity in the territory.
We need to be very plain about this, that there are two crises. One is the medical one and the other one is the economic one. And that economic crisis is going to be present far greater challenges, I think, than we can easily speak of. And it will require a complete renovation to the way government conducts its business. It is, you know, we're all hopeful, but unless we can completely renovate and focus our efforts on identifying what is of economic value here and make sure we've got processes to expedite that, we're lost, because we've got a GST pool that is going to be reduced significantly, and we will have a share of a much reduced pool. We're throwing everything at this as necessary. But the landscape afterwards is not just the opportunities and the different methods and the approaches of government and the and having some entrepreneurship. It is the capacity to do so. We've thrown everything at it, so it's going to be very much like a post-war.
Well, and I think at the moment, obviously, as we should be, the federal government's stepping up and we're relying quite heavily on the federal government. Every Australian is needing to rely on the federal government. But Terry, the point you made then about the reality is that after all this is over, we're either going to end up, there is going to be some taxation differences and ways in which I think a lot of these things need to be paid for. It has been noted by a lot of people that it's going to be our children that'll be paying for this. And I think that we're in a situation with, you know, we have to go down this path, because the reality is if the federal government wasn't going down this path, well, the impact would be absolutely devastating. It already is. But the point you make is I don't think we can be so reliant on the federal government post this. We're going to need to really put our big boy pants on and get stuck
and get
into
on
it.
With it.
Or
that's exactly right.
Yeah.
You know, we really do need to be looking better at how we deal with private investment, that's for sure. But Katie, you touched on something earlier, and that's those fixed costs for businesses. So the Territory Government, I know the Chief Minister is on the National Cabinet, and we know the Federal Government is pouring hundreds of billions of dollars into our nation. And the Territory Government you know, have their $50 million and the 65 package, and of course are supporting our health and our police. I'm not discrediting what they're doing at all. But we cannot stop. And we've got to continue to look at ways, find the gaps in all of these packages, because there are gaps, and be supporting our businesses to keep employing people and to stay open. I've been talking a lot about payroll tax, because that is a lot of feedback I'm getting from businesses. And I think, you know, the Chief may have commented earlier in the week that there's only about, you know, only in inverted commas, 500 businesses that would benefit. But these are people who employ a lot of Territorians.
He said to me he doesn't want some of those big businesses that are actually doing quite well at the moment, like Coles and Woolies,
sure,
to kind of benefit
the
from
small
a payroll
and mediums.
Tax. Yeah,
it's got to be around the small and mediums. That's what we're putting out there. And these people employ 500 territory small and medium businesses will employ thousands of other Territorians. And so if that can help pay their rent, pay their suppliers, pay their staff, deal with their power and water costs, then that's got to be a good thing. And if it's not that, then the Chief's got to come out and say what it is that they are going to do.
Katie, just to speak about the coronavirus, we're seeing absolutely horrific images coming out of Europe, the United States. But to reassure Territorians and Australians, and I think it's from both a health and an economic perspective, because this is a health emergency that is causing an economic crisis. We came through the global financial crisis, and the measures that were put out by the then Labor federal government really softened the impact of that and allowed our economy to rebound. In terms of this health aspect, we are very well prepared. The jurisdictions are working together, sharing resources. We will care for Australians and Territorians. In terms of the economic, again, you're seeing the federal government, this time a Liberal government coalition, stepping up, working with states and territories and really providing that stimulus that they have to do so that we have got a basis for our economy to rebound post this event.
I will, in a little while, we're going to talk about the childcare subsidy and also the fact that school sort of goes pupil-free next week. One of the questions that's just come through for you, actually, Filesy, it says, Katie, I'm worried about FIFO minors from interstate. Are they being tested? Because my husband says they're not. Can you please ask Minister Files for me?
So this is something that the health authorities have been working with at the Minister for Primary Industries Resources. It's something that we need to make sure some of those mines that operate remotely, that yes, they might be placed near a remote community, but there's actually no interaction. We need to make sure some of those things can keep operating. They each have a pandemic plan, and so it's working through for them what exactly happens. What we've seen is we have seen a shift in some of the workforces in other areas where the workforce is either staying or not coming at all. So it comes from a health perspective first, but we certainly do need to keep whatever economic opportunities we can open.
I've got another message here from a listener. It says, hi, Katie, with there being so many people unemployed at the moment, it's a great time for people to be employed and sent out around Darwin to mow verges, keep work on beautifying Darwin by the way of maintenance and things that are usually put off being done. I'm sure there are lots of people that would rather be working right now. And I think that's actually a really nice message. You know, there are a lot of people that sometimes I think the toughest thing is when you're unemployed or say you're in your business is in hibernation at the moment and you're still being paid, is that you feel like you've got nothing to get up out of bed for. And I think it's so very important that people do have something to get up and do, to have that purpose.
Well, that's, I think the first place to go with that is the seniors. In the past, we depend upon prisoners to go out there and mow some of those lawns and so on. And we're not able to keep up with that. We've got rain at the moment. There's plenty of grass around. One of the international students that I'm helping out, he can't do anything at the moment, so we've given him a lawnmower and go and help people. And so that's one thing you can do. Go and talk to seniors, because some of them are really scared at the moment and they need a hand. So that would be the first place you could direct that, I reckon.
360's The Week That Was for BTC Constructions.
Well, it is The Week That Was. I've got Terry Mills, Leah Finocchiaro and Natasha Files with me this morning. And look, there's a lot to cover off on, but I want to talk about the federal government's announcement yesterday about the childcare subsidy. We know that childcare is going to be made available for free for parents who continue working during the coronavirus pandemic. That's what the Prime Minister Scott Morrison announced yesterday. Now, the federal government will also provide financial support to more than 13,000 centres around the country as the sector struggles to remain viable. The announcement comes after the sector pleaded for a bailout, saying that it was facing a crisis like never before because of a massive hit to both of its income streams because of that falling attendance. Now, look, I know for me, and I know that a lot of us would feel exactly the same, those early childhood educators are so very important. For myself, I simply would not have been able to go back to work if I wasn't able to get my children into childcare in those younger years. And the people that cared for my children were absolutely phenomenal. I think it's so important that we try to keep this sector going, because goodness knows we're going to need it when this is over.
Well, that's exactly right, Katie. They do an amazing job, just like our schools. You know, we entrust our most precious to them and they deliver every single day. So I think this is a really terrific package from the federal government. I was just talking to my son's childcare must have been last week about this very issue of dropping numbers and then what that means for viability. So it's very important because, of course, let's not forget all of our emergency workers and all those people we're relying so heavily on at the moment.
Yep.
They're going to need that support. And then, of course, when we come out the other end and people are back in jobs and our economy is starting to tick over, we're going to need those childcare centres to still be there. I mean, they're a business like others.
Others.
And
yeah,
that package was very much welcomed. Katie, speaking to the local childcare centres in my electorate, they've been grappling with parents that either aren't working and so therefore can't afford to pay the fees, yep, potentially, or there's been, you know, parents who have pulled their children for various reasons, but paying the fees, but not sure how long they can come. So I think, yeah, it's a really welcome measure. It provides certainty to that and allows time to work through these issues. And then, as Leah said, when we come out the other side, that sector will be supported and be there for us.
Yeah, I totally agree. But it also points once again to what are we facing economically after this? I mean, it's necessary now, but we've also got to be able to get our mind around how we're going to get out of this. And it's pointing to how serious this issue is. The maintenance of a basic functioning economy now, but how are we going to repay all of this? And that's why crafting of a very comprehensive, inspirational economic package and vision for the Northern Territory and the country is absolutely essential. Every time you hear one of these announcements, as warranted and as important as it is, it also increases the requirement for a new approach to the rebuilding of the territory economy.
Yeah, well, and I think it's not just the territory economy, but economies all around the world, indeed Australia. And I don't think that Scott Morrison or indeed Josh Frydenberg are taking those decisions lightly. They must be it must be really tough, you know, trying to go through the books and trying to work out exactly how much money can be invested, how long it's going to take to pay back. I mean, the difficulty that we're going to have here in the Northern Territory is, and I'm not trying to politicise this, but we know that we're going to the polls in August, but realistically we're not going to have any idea of how the books are looking here in the Territory. I know that there are going to be some updates provided, but in the lead up to that election.
That's absolutely right. But in terms of Frydenberg and Morrison, I commend them for a message that they've sent out and taken the lead on an international message that the functioning economies that we're related to, particularly those most affected, need to also be coordinated. So it is a global economy now, and there needs to be some coordination about how we all respond to this so that we can also respond as a nation.
And we've seen those G20 summits that we usually see our leaders fly to wonderful exotic places. They've gone to a telepresence.
Well, they're those ones where they wear the Hawaiian shirts.
They wear the funny shirts.
They all wear matching
shirts.
They all
look very awkward as well.
They're meant to be cultured to the country.
Well,
no, they've gone to a telepresence. So I think, you know, I think we've already acknowledged that when we come through the other side of this, it'll be a very different world that we live in. But they certainly are talking at that international global level, not just, you know, within Australia and the states and territories, working with the Commonwealth government.
Locally, though, Katie, you raise a really important point. I mean, you know, we've passed legislation now that allows the government not to deliver a budget, not to deliver a pre-election fiscal outlook, and they've indicated that they'll provide quarterly reporting, but we still don't understand what that looks like. It's critical at this point in time, even though everyone wants all of our leaders absolutely focused on the health crisis, ensuring Territorians are safe and healthy, of course, mitigating as much of this economic disaster as we can. But that transparency has to be there. That accountability
absolutely
has to be there. It's very, very important going forward. And so it's really incumbent upon the government because we're really entrusting a lot in them to be able to be transparent.
We certainly agree with the Leader of the Opposition around that. The Treasurer is very conscious of the responsibilities that have been handed to her and to us as a government, and I know certainly Leah, you hold us and Terry to account, but in terms of making sure that the community is informed, that because of the fact we're not seeing a federal government budget, and that all the states and territories have deferred their budget, but I think there's three jurisdictions that are in the situation, Queensland, ACT and NT, of also facing an election.
Yeah, we've got the capacity to move the date of the election, just be clear about that.
Do you reckon we should, Terry?
Well, I think so, because when we go to the polls, the question is not how well you've handled the health crisis, is how you're going to be able to manage the real crisis, which is the economic crisis. And if you don't have the economic data, if you don't have a read on what the landscape is going forward, how are people going to be able to make a proper decision? And also the message coming from the bush, those out in the remote areas are so scared of what's happening at the moment and are responding very, very well. It won't be an easy matter to undo that by August and have them comfortable about people moving in and out around their communities.
Is it on the cards, Falsey, to delay the election?
We would be very hesitant. We have a mandate till August 22nd and beyond that is in the hands of Territorians. I think that there is time to plan. But Katie, we don't know what's going to happen next week or next month. And we certainly have seen, you know, just a couple of weeks ago, if we talked about some of these measures that have been put in place, people wouldn't have believed us. But we are very, very hesitant. We were elected till the 22nd of August, all of us as individual members, but we certainly, I think the urban areas is a little different, but with our remote communities, operating polling certainly is difficult.
There's no doubt there's, you know, logistic, practical, democratic challenges with pushing ahead to August, but to be quite honest, Katie, I think at the moment the focus really needs to be on the crisis in front of us. There's plenty of time to worry about an election. This is about the health of Territorians, our coordinated response, and ensuring that we get through this as best as we possibly can.
You are, of course, listening to Mix 104.9's 360, proudly brought to you by BTC Constructions. Well, quite a few messages coming through this morning. If you do want to send us a text message, you most certainly can, or you can send us an email, 360 inbox. It is brought to you by Mile End Furniture. Now, I'm keen for us to have a chat about the petrol prices, because this is something that is raised. It's nearly every day, I've got to say, over the last week or so. People are pretty concerned that we're not seeing a drop in petrol prices, despite the fact that there is obviously a drop in oil prices and quite clearly a drop in the terminal gate price. I've just gone and had a look at the terminal gate price today, and when you're talking about your unleaded petrol, the terminal gate is at 87.5 cents, but the fairest or the cheapest that you're going to find it around Darwin today is at $1.22.5. Then when you talk about the diesel prices, they are a bit higher, $1.05.5 at the terminal gate, but then your diesel is sitting at $1.29.5. Now, I know that the Fuel Express owner, Pat, has said that that there is less traffic, obviously, going into those petrol stations at the moment, but at the moment, it does seem as though there is quite a big gap between what is coming in at the terminal gate and then what we're paying at the bowser. A lot of Territorians questioning when we are going to see that price drop to some degree.
It is disappointing, Katie, when you see the oil prices drop globally, you see that gate price drop and then it's not passed on. Some of it is through that they've bought it at a certain price and it hasn't, you know, they haven't bought their next lot at that lower price, but it's certainly frustrating for consumers and invite them to make sure that they look around, buy the cheapest fuel and fill up their tanks there.
It's one of those things, though, as well. There, I guess, you know, you do have a lot of stations that are owned by the same companies. So you want to try and I don't know. I mean, we've had this happen to us previously. Obviously, it was something that Pete Davies had fought really hard for. That was when I was producing his show. I actually said this morning, well, I'm going back to the old days of checking the terminal gate price every
morning. At least the Palmerston Hospital's built.
Yeah.
One less thing for him to be angry at that.
But it is one of those things that, you know, at the moment, everyone's doing it tough in so many ways, and those little things that if there was a drop or if there is a drop in those prices, it's certainly appreciated by everybody. But I mean, the fact is here we're seeing that huge drop in oil prices, and like I said, people are just wondering why it's not being passed on.
Yeah, I think we expect that gap to close. And you make a very good point that these are national and international companies, and it's a bit like the groceries that you're buying in Coles are being at a Darwin price when in fact it's spread right across the country. So there needs to be, you know, there's got to be some creative thinking of how we can actually lighten that load for Territorians. And I get stopped constantly on this issue. And I think, yeah, of course there is the cost, but they see what's happening in other states and they see it's unjust.
Yep.
And there needs to be a response. I understand what Pat's saying, but I think there needs to be a bit more of an effort made to close that gap.
Well, and I want to point out, Pat is by far the cheapest as well. Like, he's by far the fairest, and he's often the one bringing those prices down. And he's a little guy.
He's a local operator, and I guess that it's part of the balance, isn't it? You know, of course we need, competitive prices, and Pat's always aspired to provide that competition in our fuel market, but also we're on unprecedented times in terms of what people can afford and how we can go forward. So, it's a huge issue, fuel prices. It has been for a long time, and particularly now when people are in financial difficulty, it's, of course, one of those things where it hurts to fill up your fuel tank.
Now, look, before we wrap up this morning, I am keen to point out the fact that we know that school is going to be pupil-free from next week. Terry, would you mind? Actually, we've got two teachers here, Terry and Files.
Watch out, Wolfie.
Might be able to get a few teaching
tips,
please.
I'm in between them. It's okay.
Ah, teaching tips.
For homeschool.
I'm going to need this.
I'm a bit scared.
Well, I tell you what's going to come out of this is a greater appreciation for teachers.
It's true.
Yeah, so Roz is a relief teacher, and she's going out every day. From the front line, I'd have to say, I'm picking this up from teachers, is that there are students coming and going.
Yep.
And if the objective is to maintain a quality education, and they've chosen to keep them at home on the basis that they're going to be supported at home, stick with that. But if the kids say, oh, no, I think I'll go back to school today, that's really compromising the fundamental purpose of this, and it's making it pretty hard at the school level. And I'm word going out to the teachers. They feel pretty well exposed in all of this and are endeavouring to respond. So the path ahead is pretty uncertain too. You know, at the end of 2 weeks, what's going to happen?
Stability and routine, Wolfie.
Oh,
in terms of what is going to happen,
the most important.
Natasha's greatest strong point.
Don't like change. In terms of schools, so next week the pupil-free days are those essential services. People that have no other option are still able to send their children, and they'll be cared for. It won't be in their formal class structures. Teachers will be utilising that time to prepare, and they've already been doing this. My kids, one of them came home with their pack of books and things ready. The other one said he'll bring them home today, so that from term two, education will be compulsory, whether it is online or whether it is face-to-face, and that will be based on the clinical advice. We don't know where we'll be in 2 weeks' time, but it's really important that, as Terry said, that stability. So pick it and stick with it, and certainly just a big shout-out to support our teachers, because I know from what's come home from my children's school, they've been teaching my children, but they have also been preparing. They've got plans to have online contact so that children can be worked through, in case parents are feeling nervous about what they have to teach.
It's really been amazing. I mean, I have to do a huge shout out to Durack Primary School. Whenever I'm on Facebook, there's always a teacher or a couple of teachers doing, they're not just reading stories online, but they're doing maths and different games and different activities that then parents can pick up on and do at home. I know, I think Girraween Primary School is doing the same thing. It's probably a whole bunch of them.
And Katie, am I allowed to mention a rival, a certain other media outlet is doing educational TV. So I remember when I was at school, I loved Behind the News, BTN.
Oh, yes,
but ABC Education will be on one of the ABC channels. For term two.
So we can let our kids watch that TV, can we?
Can be part of their routine, Wolfie.
Sorry to rain on this. I mean, all of that's
fantastic. I think it's only on 10 to 3.
But there is another aspect to this, and I think it's going to be something we must watch carefully. Mm. There are those that don't engage with school at the best of times.
Yeah.
So in a time like this, and talking to Serena Dalton, in preparing to run the holiday programs, which are in a very restricted situation, what's going to happen with those kids that sort of opt in and out of school and turn their hand to things that are really antisocial? These are things to watch, and I'm pretty concerned how this might develop. As people sort of settle into this routine, there are others who are going to observe this routine and make hay while the sun shines, which I'm concerned about.
In terms of that, I know that schools are very focused, so there's resources that the schools have got, but we are conscious that there's children that are disadvantaged, that, you know, our house has got multiple computers, iPads, technological devices to assist with that learning, but there are families that are particularly vulnerable, and so they're looking at how they can provide it.
Well, I think it goes back to that argument as well. Some of the youth crime and things that we've spoken about so often is that, you know, not every kid comes from a home where their parents actually care whether they're engaged in school or not. Terry, I think you make a very good point that for some of those families, it is going to be quite difficult. And for some of those kids, you think, well, you don't want them then engaging in the wrong behaviour.
And we can't run the programs that we did during the school, during the normal period of time. So, yeah, those ones that fall through the cracks at the best of times, what's going to happen now? And that's something we've got to watch. I know it's great what's happening, but there are homes that kids don't want to associate with, and they associate with each other, and let's be mindful of that. That's going to be something to manage going forward.
We are going to have to wrap up for the morning. A big thank you, Terry Mills, the member for Blaine and also the leader of Territory Alliance. Thank you for your time this morning. Leah Finocchiaro, the opposition leader and also the member for Spillett, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Katie, and to your listeners, have a lovely weekend.
And Natasha Files, the member for... Nightcliff, sorry, I was going to say Daily then. I thought, hang on a second.
That'll get people talking, Katie.
We'll take it.
The member for Nightcliff and also, of course, the Health Minister and Attorney General. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Mix 104.9's Week That Was, proudly brought to you by BTC Constructions.